You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.
What if you could learn more about your health in under an hour? The Pronuvo Whole Body Scan gives you a comprehensive look at your health, screening for over 500 conditions, including many solid tumors as early as stage one. High-quality imaging, no radiation, no contrast. Book your scan today at Pronuvo.com. That's Prenuvo.com. Gain clarity, confidence, and peace of mind with Pronuvo. Invest in your health today. Visit Prenuvo.com. That's Prenuvo.com.
If you're a podcast host, listen up, this one's for you. My name is Allie Jackson. I'm the host of Finding Mr. Height, a dating and relationship podcast that I've been doing for 4 years now, sharing my positive and practical approach to dating that's built on my own life experience. And I wanted to share another experience that I've had, my secret behind monetizing my show. It's called Red Circle. And I was just telling my colleague about how much I love their platform. With Red Circle, not only am I getting a seamless hosting experience, but I also love the support I receive in ad sales. It's not just typical ad sales either. It's targeted opportunities based on my show and my life. And the platform is super simple. You just set your preferences and Red Circle matches you with sponsors that align with your show. You can vet every opportunity and their platform gives you great analytics. More recently too, my Red Circle team has brought me opportunities outside of my podcast on social media to really augment the podcast partnerships, bring them full circle. I just can't recommend them enough. If you want to give it a try, go to redcircle.com to get your free trial. That's redcircle.com for a free trial.
This episode of the Sportsman's Empire is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. Since 1952, Interstate Batteries has been evoking compassion and a trustworthy spirit into the surrounding communities. Interstate Batteries is a mission-driven company fueled by purpose and guided by their values. If you need help locating a specific battery, stop into your local Interstate Batteries retail store and speak with a battery specialist. They even offer cell phone repairs. Interstate Batteries. Outrageously dependable.
Where's your playlist taking you? Down the highway? To the mountains? Or just into daydream mode while you're stuck in traffic? With over 4,000 hotels worldwide, Best Western is there to help you make the most of your getaway. Wherever that is. Because the only thing better than a great playlist is a great trip. Life's the trip. Make the most of it at Best Western. Book direct and save at bestwestern.com.
Ugh, you said you were over him, but his hoodie is still in your rotation. It's time. Grab your phone, snap a few pics, and sell it on Depop. Listed in minutes, with no selling fees. And just like that, a guy 500 miles away just paid full price for your closure. And right on cue.
Hey, still got my hoodie?
Nope, but I've got tonight's dinner paid for. Start selling on Depop, where taste recognizes taste. List now with no selling fees. Payment processing fees and boosting fees still apply. See website for details.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, my name is Dan Johnson, and this is the How to Hunt Deer podcast. And today's guest is Mr. Brendan Wallen. Wallen?
Whalen.
I said it right the first time.
Yeah.
And then I'm dumb, so I said it wrong the second. Okay. Whalen. Brendan Whalen, how are we doing, man?
Good. How are you, Dan?
I'm doing good, man. I'm doing good. What part of the country do you live in?
I live in New York. Tri-state area, right on the border of New Jersey and Pennsylvania.
Okay. So I always ask people who live in that area, like, how far are you from New York and how far are you from Philly?
Philly's about 3 hours and change, some change. And I'm about an hour and change outside of New York City.
What's that like? Because I live in a stop sign or a town with like three stop signs. That's it.
Okay? Yeah, honestly. Once you get an hour outside the city, it turns pretty, a little bit more country than people think. It turns that way pretty quick. I grew up here. It was a farm town when I grew up. It is getting built up, unfortunately, but it's still, we're in the woods.
Yeah. How often do you travel into the city?
Never.
Okay. Okay.
If I don't have to, yeah, no. I might get called down there for work here and there, but yeah.
Gotcha. What do you do for a living?
I'm a New York State trooper, and I'm on the underwater recovery team. So I'm full-time scuba. Me and another guy run our troop scuba team. So that's our gig.
So when somebody or something has to be recovered, you go and get them.
Yes.
Okay. Dude, like, I bet you've seen some absolutely crazy things.
Yeah, it's weird the stuff you come across that you wouldn't think in the water because no one's ever exploring down there. So
yeah. And then, like, I'm guessing it's not crystal clear water. So no. So it comes up on you like that, like really quick.
Yeah. Like if you picture the horror movies when someone's looking for something on the bottom and it's right in front of their face, that's kind of how it is.
So your life is a horror movie, basically.
Here and there.
Here and there. Okay. So I just want to say yes or no. Okay. Have you ever had to pull a body out that's been there a while?
Yes.
Okay. All right. I don't want to go into any more detail other than that. Okay. And you said, okay. The other thing is, I had a conversation years ago, even before I started podcasting, with a guy who was an underwater welder for making big bridges across the Mississippi. And every once in a while, they'd have to go down in there and check. And he goes, there's catfish down there, as far as size is concerned, that you wouldn't have, like, you couldn't even imagine how big they are. Like, do you ever see any animals or fish down there that are just stupendous?
Yeah, I mean, do we see them? You'll see fish. But like you said, the water's not great clarity. So like in the Hudson River, that's where you'll find the biggest fish. There's sturgeon in there. So doing some searches on our sonar prior to going in, we've marked some sturgeon like 13, 16 feet long.
Holy cow.
Yeah. And there's some old timers that have claimed to have run into some big things down there.
Yeah. That's crazy, dude. Other than humans and big sturgeon, what are some of the other crazy things that you have run into while exploring down there?
So we're mostly tasked at finding, you know, evidence, cars, and bodies. So if we're looking for a specific item, you come across, so if say there's been plenty of times where, oh, you're looking for this kind of handgun and you find other handguns or other long guns or shotguns that, you know, the investigators are like, oh, put that back.
Yeah. That's crazy. So you're going in looking. I just envisioned like the bottom of the Hudson River just littered with weapons and evidence for murders that you're like, we're looking for X and we found A, B, and C instead.
It's pretty accurate.
That blows my mind, dude. So needless to say, it's a very interesting job. Have you ever found anything of historical significance?
Yeah, there's guys that they call themselves muckers on the team.
Okay.
And you know, on your free time you can go do your own dives, you know, like at trainings or something, and you'll go to spots. There's one guy on the team that really loves history. He researches all the battles and stuff. Mm-hmm. So we'll go to these historic spots and find cannonballs and old hand-blown glass bottles, and there was one guy that found a pre-Civil War, I believe it was, super long, cool flintlock rifle, and he had that restored. That's so there's crazy. Really cool stuff down there.
Yeah. Are muckers the same guys that throw the giant magnets out and they drag it across the bottom?
No, those are more like civilian magnet fishers.
Okay.
Magnet fishermen.
Gotcha.
Mucking is pretty much diving down to the bottom with as much weight on you that you need to sink, hit the bottom, and go elbow deep in the muck till you find something.
So you're basically just filtering through the mud with your hands until you find something.
Oh, yeah, because that stuff's long buried.
Oh, my God. That just does not sound like fun to me.
Yeah.
But I could...
If you're in a good spot and you're finding a lot of cool old bottles, it can keep you busy. But if you're not finding anything, it's pretty monotonous.
Oh my God, that's crazy. Every once in a while, I'll have one of those Facebook reels come across where some guy is on a phone. You don't know who he's talking to. And they say, we found him. And it's underwater scuba guys who are trying to solve murders that have not been solved.
Yep.
So that's kind of like what you do.
Yeah. We've run into those guys a couple times. Actually, they come and try to tell you, oh, you missed this spot or this spot, but they found some stuff for sure.
All right. Cool, man. Cool. Well, interesting job. How many, last question, I promise. Last question. How many days of the week or of the month are you actually underwater doing your job?
It's pretty much seasonal dependent. Okay. So like right now, not too often unless we get a call or we have an annual winter in service. So we just wrapped that up last week where we're cutting holes in the ice and teaching the new guys how to dive in the ice and stuff like that. But usually in the spring and summers when it heats up, you start getting jumpers more often and more evidence to find. So the warm weather is when we follow up on cold cases and stuff like that.
Gotcha. All right. Cool, man. Cool. Well, very interesting job. I'm glad I don't do it, but congratulations for not having a boring, you know, cubicle job. That's pretty awesome. Before we get into the meat and potatoes of today's episode, I do want to send a huge shout out to our partner over at Reveal Trail Cameras. Reveal is doing something really cool right now where you can take all the trail cameras that are not Reveal and you can turn them in. And I think each one is a $50 credit towards a brand new camera. So that's crazy. And so that's a pretty good deal there. Go check out tacticam.com/cameras and check out their full lineup of cameras, their brand new Ultra, and then explore on the app a little bit. Download the app and you can do a whole bunch of really cool things with it, with the app as well. So, all right. How does Brendan Whalen make his decisions on what hunting gear to purchase?
That is a good question. So honestly, it is what I look at what hasn't been working for me in the long run. Me personally, I'm super frugal with my dollars. So okay. I can't just go out and buy the next new bow every year and new arrows. And so when I look at gear, I try to talk to people about it. And for me, it's like when I'm in the woods, if something's not working for me, that's when I'll start to look for other options, whether it's as simple as like a bino harness or trail cameras or, you know, stuff like that. But yeah. I try to not go too gear crazy because I know, you know, I've run into guys that are just, they're gear junkies, which, you know, we all love new gear, but you know, unfortunately everything is not the cheapest. So I like to really vet my stuff. I'll listen to guys like you and all the informative podcasts that are, you know, in it every day, using it and putting it really through the ringer. And that's when I'll kind of make a decision on whether it's applicable to me or if I could pass.
Yeah. What specific ways do you vet your equipment?
Well, like I said, watching different hunting channels, how they use it. And really put it through the ringer. Like stand selection is big for me because I haven't gotten into the harness game yet. I love a good comfy lock on, but also if it's too heavy, I'm not going to lug it around. So I need to be able to use it, actually apply it to, you know, get whether it's getting mobile or getting a couple permanent sets up. And if I like the one product. If it's a tree stand, I'll test one out for a season and then I'll decide if I really need it or not. And I'll buy a bunch more or I'll check out something else.
Gotcha. Okay. When it comes to, there's always like a breaking point, right? When you're sitting there going, dude, this thing sucks. Like, people put up with things for a while until all of a sudden there's like this throw it out of the tree moment. I'm done using it. How long does it take you to get to that point?
If it messes me up in the woods on a specific instance, then that's, you know, a red flag right away, but I'll put up with it for a season.
Yeah.
At least a season and really give it a chance. You know, that's kind of just put it to use.
Yeah. Yeah. And so you'll basically use it until it proves you wrong.
Yeah. Gotcha. Or if I see there's like a better, more streamlined option.
Gotcha.
Where it's like, oh, well, that's obviously way better for this application.
Give me an example of a product that maybe you were using for a while and then you're just like, dude, this isn't cutting it. I need something different.
climber tree stands.
Okay. Explain.
Like back in the day, let's say back in the day, high school, 2008, 2009 is when I really started going out on my own, doing my own thing, chasing whitetails, trying to get permission pieces. And obviously I was just a high school kid, so I didn't have all the money to buy a stand for every property and every wind and all that. So I got my dad's hand-me-down lock, climber.
Yep.
Couldn't even tell you what brand it was at the time. And that's what I would use and just go to every lugging those things in. You know, the older ones weren't the lightest. So that plus a pack, plus your gun or your bow. And by the time you get up into the stand, it's not like it is today. They're loud and clunky and
you're
sweating by the time you get up there. And doing that for a couple of years is like, all right, something has to change.
Yeah.
That's probably when I started looking at the more mobile lock-on sets.
Yeah.
Lighter.
What were some of the first lock-ons that you started looking at back in the day?
Oof. I think they were Trophy Ridge?
Could've
Timber
been.
Ridge? They were an off-brand for sure.
Yeah. 'Cause
I was looking at dollars first.
Yeah.
But yeah, whatever the smallest little platform, I believe they're like a Timber Ridge, they were called. Yeah. They had the mesh seat that just folds up and down. Not super comfortable, but they were the first ones I started messing with. And then once podcast became a big thing and I was listening to you and Mark talk about your setups. And then I was looking at Lone Wolf and back in the day, Lone Wolf and Ventanovix. And now, this past two seasons, I've went with brand Nested. They're pretty new.
Oh yeah. I've heard about, I actually want to get those guys on. I don't know if I have had them on. It's been several years and they've done some pretty cool things in the recent past that have warranted them coming on again. I need to write that down.
Yeah. So
what about Nested? Did you like?
So I was basically, like I was saying, I'm still frugal with my dollars, but I'm looking at, I compared all the light setups that were about the same size platform for the weight ratio, and they had the biggest platform, and I think they were the second lightest that I found. Other than Lone Wolf, their setups are just super light and small, and but they're a little bit pricier than what I wanted to go with, but for the dollar amount and the weight ratio and the platform size, they were the number one that I could find. And it's a super comfortable stand. And there's a lot of adjustability with it. And I'm happy with it for sure this year.
Gotcha. Where does the adjustability come in on something like that? Are you able to because when I think of a lock-on, right, I think of two different types of lock-ons, straight tree, and then the XOP Lone Wolf, where you can make it an adjustment, either leaning forward or adjusting the seat or off to the side on a crooked tree with that bat wing portion of the stand. So there's two. You can put it in a crooked tree or you can't put it in a crooked tree. Does Nested allow you to get into the crooked trees?
Yes, for sure.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah,
their bat wings are super adjustable and they dig into the tree really well.
Yeah.
Their seat is super adjustable. It's the same setup. You know, it's got the nut that goes in and out, but it was super stable. And it's got the notches in the actual, I don't know, the main.
The riser.
Kind of the riser.
Yeah, whatever that is. Yeah.
There's at least four or five notches there that you get the platform super adjusted. And
yeah,
I love that aspect. And it being light, what I did this year, I bought a whole bunch of sticks and I just set up my spots with climbing sticks. And then I kept the platform with me in the truck so I could go to each spot, just zip right up the tree, lock it on, and you're good to go.
Gotcha. So you kind of went with buy more sticks and one stand method, and you're just taking the stand down every time you leave.
Yeah, for the most part. Like my run and gun rut setups, they're just ready with sticks.
Gotcha. And is that on private and public or just one?
It's mostly private.
Mostly private. Okay.
So that's all permission pieces around here. It's small spots and farmland.
Gotcha. Okay. All right. Which would allow you to keep, dude, because I've hunted public before and I used to leave all my stuff up when I hunted a majority of public back in the day, long time ago. And I would just feel like someone was going to steal my stuff every time I'd go out there. And luckily now I hunt mostly private, and now I don't have that feeling anymore.
Yeah. That's how it is here. If you leave something on public, don't expect it to be there when you come back. Even on private, you know, right. We got stuff yanked all the time around here. It's unfortunate, but it happens.
Yeah. All right. So that's anything else about tree stands or sticks? Did you go with the complete nested system, and did you take buy the sticks too?
No, I had a bunch of sticks already. I had some old Novik sticks.
Yeah.
And this year I went with XOP for whatever I bought with the sticks, because they were the cheapest. And they had the three-step sticks, and they were about $100-something cheaper than all the other. So I think they were running a special too. It was like $80 for three full-size sticks. So I bought a handful of those.
Yeah, and correct me if I'm wrong, XOP has the bigger footstep on it as well.
Yep.
Dude, I absolutely love my original Lone Wolves that I have, right? The Assault with the four original sticks. Yep. The bad part is when they get wet and you have to hang it in kind of a crooked tree, then your feet slide off. And I had to do that. That happened to me in Kansas when I had to cross a creek, my boots got muddy. And so, but now I'm looking at XOP's website here, and I'm going to pull up their sticks once just so I can say the right mobile system climbing sticks. Oh, they're completely different now.
Two Good & Co. coffee creamers are made with farm fresh cream, real milk, and contain 3 grams of sugar per serving. That's 40% less than the 5 grams per serving in leading traditional coffee creamers for a rich, delicious experience. Whether you enjoy your coffee hot, cold, bold, or frothy, Two Good coffee creamers make every sip a good one. Two Good coffee creamers, real goodness in every sip. Find them at your local Kroger in the creamer aisle.
USAA knows dynamic duos can save the day, like superheroes and sidekicks, or auto and home insurance. With USAA, you can bundle your auto and home and save up to 10%. Tap the banner to learn more and get a quote at usaa.com/bundle. Restrictions apply.
XOPOutdoors.com.
The ones I ended up going with were they weren't the full two-sided stick. It was the adjustable side sticks with three steps.
Yeah, so is it three steps, but it can go one or the other.
Yeah.
Okay. That's the LMO4 three pack for $120. And I like that. I like that scoop in the step that allows it to, right. And so just from me personally, knowing that I'm getting old and knowing that, I like that the curve in that step, but also, there's another, the X3 is another one, but any stick that has double sides now to where I can pull myself up and stand on one level, you know what I mean? Where I don't have to have a knee up or a knee down. I think I'm going to start leaning to sticks like that just because of that experience and me having a shit knee.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I'm going to be looking at those types of climbing sticks. So if you're listening to this, let me know what climbing sticks that meet that criteria, like send me a DM or something and let me know what your guys' favorite climbing sticks are, because I would love to start messing around with climbing sticks that are not just for young mobile guys. How old are you?
36.
Okay. So you're still young, or I feel young, but my body feels old. If that makes sense.
Yeah.
So I'm making young man decisions, but my body is not keeping up with that. So, all right. What about, this is something that after I saw your page, your Instagram page, I saw that you hunt moose you were in Africa and hunted a bigger body, like a kudu, whitetails, turkey, things like that. And the first thing that kind of popped into my mind was arrows and broadheads and things like that. Cause when I go elk hunting, I use a different broadhead than I would if I'm going mule deer and whitetail hunting. How do you make your selection on broadheads and what style of broadhead you're using?
Yep. So I've had a couple bad experiences where, basically I lost the biggest two bucks I've ever shot at, hit him in the shoulder with a big expandable. Obviously it stopped the arrow and that was the end of that.
What brand was that?
The first one was the Big Rage 2 blade back in the day.
Yep.
And that deer ended up living. We saw him with a doe a week later. And then the last experience I had was with that new Beast broadhead, the Bomar broadhead.
Okay.
It said it was going to evade the bone, but didn't in this case. It cut a big old hole in his shoulder. We got pictures of him about a month later, still alive and limping around, but he had a big hole right in the middle of his shoulder. So that made me switch to fixed broadheads.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, you take that scenario. That's two bad scenarios. Yeah. Now I want to ask the question, why do you think that those broadheads did not go through the shoulder?
Just the cutting diameter. You lose so much kinetic energy once you hit that shoulder blade. That's the worst spot I think you could probably hit.
Yeah.
And with the biggest cutting diameter, 2 inches, you know.
Yeah.
It's a bad day.
Yeah. What about the arrow weight behind those broadheads? How much were you at those times, how much were you shooting?
So I had a regular setup for the first go, probably like 425, 450. But the last one was not this past season, but the year before. That was in Illinois. So that was a big deer to begin with.
Yeah.
And I had amped up my setup to probably around 515, I want to say.
Mm-hmm.
And right now my arrow setup's like 550.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay.
With fixed.
Yeah. And so you had two bad experiences. You kind of went back to your original comments at the beginning of the podcast where you're like, enough was enough. Talk to me a little bit about what the process for finding a fixed blade and what fixed blade you chose.
So for whitetail, I went with the Iron Will wide. Mm-hmm. Just all the reviews, you can't really dispute. The Lusk Archery videos, I watched all those. He's super in depth. I don't know if you've ever seen his broadhead review videos. So I bounced back and forth with a couple that I was looking at, like the Day 6 were pretty similar.
Mm-hmm.
So for whitetail, I went with that, the wide, and it's been good to me ever since.
Mm-hmm.
And then for Africa, I actually put 80-pound limbs on my bow because I was going for Cape Buffalo. So I was trying to punch through. We never caught up with a buffalo, but I shot a kudu at 42 yards and it zipped right through and came out the opposite shoulder. So that was with a Cayuga pilot cut blade.
Okay. And that the name of the brand is Cayuga?
Cayuga, yeah. I believe they're all from Australia.
And is that a single, were those all single bevels?
That was a single bevel, with a pilot cut, smaller like bleeder blades.
Gotcha. Okay.
And 125 grains.
Gotcha. Okay. And so for whitetails, it was Iron Will. And for Africa, was it a similar type of broadhead? Now, are you shooting that big setup now for whitetails again? Did you just keep everything the same?
Yeah, I haven't changed it. I plan to, I hunted with it this whitetail season on the back end. We went to, I was in Africa in September. So yeah, I hunted this season with it. And I mean, I shot five does and it didn't it was passer every time.
Yeah. Well, I would think so. 550 with a fixed blade, single bevel. Those are just very hardcore heads anyway at 80 pounds. And what's your draw length?
It's short, 27 and a quarter.
Yeah. That momentum is just,
but it still had the 80 pound limbs I just put on.
Yeah. That's what I'm saying.
That helped.
That's what I'm saying. So that's crazy. I can remember the first doe that I ever shot once I bumped up my arrow weight, and went from like, it wasn't where I'm at now. So I think it was like 504 was the total arrow weight from when I stepped up, and I shot this like 2-year-old doe at, I don't even know, like 19 yards. And she was a little bit quartering away, went right behind the shoulder. It hit the socket on the other end on her opposite side, went through and knocked her to the ground. And I was like, dude, if this is what heavy arrow weight, like, I'm not an FOC guy. I'm not like this guy who, you know, is too crazy about his arrows, but I like to shoot a heavy arrow. And that was my test. And when I saw that, I'm like, I'm never going back down. I don't think I'm ever going to want to go back down after seeing the performance out of this.
Yeah. Yeah. I have a similar experience when I was playing with arrow weight before I looked at broadheads. Mm-hmm. Had to have been at least 5 years ago. We have a lot of black bear in the area. Yeah. So I built like a 500 grain full metal jacket arrow. And I always use the old school Rage Extremes, the big yellow ones.
Yep.
And I shot a bear, you know, right in front of me, 20 yards, quartering away super hard. But I was super confident with this arrow for some reason that I never tested yet. And I mean, it drove up diagonally his entire body and blew out his chest. So I was like, okay, heavy arrows work.
Yeah, for sure. What about, are there certain pieces or products that you put more thought process into than others? Like, I never used to be back in the day, I do now, but back in the day, I never used to be a guy who, I didn't really care what sight I was using. You know, but as technology got better, I started to care a little bit more. Are there pieces of gear, or whether it's boots or weapons or accessories that you just don't care about, you put less time in, thought in?
Back in the day, I would say yes, but now it's a little bit more thought out because I want to buy once, cry once type deal instead of, you know, buying a new jacket every year or boots, you know. So I've kind of leaned more towards better quality gear. I would say there's one thing that I bought this year that I feel kind of bougie with.
What is it?
Yeah, they are heated sock liners.
My man.
Game changer.
Maybe you're getting older than you're older than I thought. What do you mean? You're not tough in the cold out anymore?
I mean, game changer.
Okay.
You can sit there all day.
Yeah. So I'm a boot cover guy, right? Okay. But I'm also for efficiency because I have to pack those in and then I put them on when I get there. Talk to me about these heated sock liners. What brand are they?
So the brand, what do they call it? It's some Swiss hiking company.
Oh, yeah. I know exactly what you're talking about. Starts with an Valhall Raven?
No. What is it? I can't even remember. I have them in the mudroom there. Okay. I'll have to grab them. But they're basically, you have your regular heat big sock on, right? Mm-hmm. So I use the best socks I've found personally have been the, how come I can't remember this right now?
Altera?
Not Altera. I think it's with a W. Good.
Darn good. Okay. Yeah. Darn good. Yep. Yep.
Yeah. Those have been the best for me all the way up to the knee.
Yep.
Put on one of those and then one of these sock liners, and basically it goes over your sock. It comes up to the calf. It's got a little portable battery right at your calf, and it's got three modes. I guess it's, you know, low, medium, high.
Yeah.
And you put that sucker on low and you're good for 4 or 5 hours. Easy.
Yeah. Are those rechargeable batteries?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So you like plug it in. It's almost like charging a cell phone.
Yeah. Yeah. They got like little, they look like GoPro batteries almost.
Yeah.
And there's a little pocket on your calf there.
Gotcha. Okay. So the socks are game changers. How cold of temperature did you have them in this year?
So New York now has this holiday hunt. So it goes till about, I believe it's January 1st is the last day.
Yep.
So it was a cold winter this year and I was sitting on the ground for most of January, just trying to fill my doe tags and get meat. And with this year we had more snow than usual too. So there was a bunch of weeks there where it was in the single digits, you know, nonstop. So this year really put it through and I was happy with it. You know, sitting for an afternoon hunt was no problem.
Yeah. Do you wear rubber boots or hiking boots with those?
You can do either. I just prefer the hiking boots. They have more insulation.
Yeah.
I
always felt like when I was wearing rubber boots, my feet would get balmy and sweaty because the moisture wasn't leaving. And then my feet would eventually get colder faster than a hiking boot, where my feet would still get cold when I wasn't wearing the boot liners. But at the same time, it didn't feel like my feet were humid even in colder weather. So that's kind of why I started leaning towards the boot covers. But now that I know about these socks, you're going to have to text me the brand name so I can check them out. Cause if I can wear them to the stand in colder temps, that's much better than having to. Let me ask you this. Do you have any other battery powered pieces of clothing that you wear?
I don't, but some buddies have recently recommended I check out some heated vests.
Yes. Yeah. So this is cool. Here's the good thing about heated vests. They work and they work very well and they keep me warm with less layers. So I don't feel so bulky in the stand. The problem is remembering to plug them in to charge every single day. and that's where I had it. And then I used it and then I don't know what year it was. I think it was, I was out west, but I was tent camping. So I was trying to charge it in my truck and it just wasn't fast enough for the charge. And so I essentially was wearing a heated vest that did not heat.
Right.
It was more of like a wind blocker layer, but you know, when you think about all the technology that is designed for us to stay in the woods longer and be more comfortable, I would feel that every single brand of camo or clothing would have a version of heated vest or socks or gloves or something like that.
Yeah. And honestly, this season, once I put those sock liners on, I was like, why don't companies have this?
Yeah, you know, all like, companies.
Like, I get maybe they want to sell more layers, but
yeah,
I mean, I'd buy a vest over, you know, three base layers.
Yeah, right. Especially for whitetail hunters, right? I mean, if you are, or people who are hunting from a house every day and you remember to plug it in, that's awesome. Maybe not so much for the backcountry hunter who's hiking in and then, setting up camp and hunting out of a camp, maybe not unless you bring extra batteries, but man, I just think like nobody's doing it. Like nobody's doing it right now.
Right.
So basically what we're saying is because we're both highly influential individuals, companies are going to start coming out with that stuff.
I mean, if they're smart.
If they're smart, yes.
So, Dan, you said you use boot covers?
Yeah, Arctic Shield by Arctic Shield.
Okay.
Yeah.
And that, you just bring that to the stand and put it on when you get there?
Yeah, they're giant socks for the boot, and then they zip up in the back, and then there's like a toggle drawstring up front, and you just cinch it down, and then essentially it's like a sleeping bag for your feet.
Gotcha.
So, and they're pretty badass, man. The only downside of them, only downside, is that they take up a lot of space in the pack, right? Yeah. And especially when it's cold out, that means you're having more layers above your ankles as well. And so I'm having to pack in a big parka, and then probably overalls, depending on how, you know, how far. If I'm going to have to walk far, then I'm going to get hot in my overalls, insulated overalls. So I won't wear them, but I'll have everything on my back. And then before I climb up in the tree, I'll get dressed at the bottom of the tree. Yep. And so I feel like a heated vest or even like heated base layers would be pretty sweet. Like maybe even heated pants, like something that you could slide on and then that's real light over top of your base layers, kind of like your sock liner, and then put your main pants on. And then when you get to the stand, you just pop it on. Or
yeah.
You wait. Do you turn your socks on instantly, or do you wait until your feet get cold to turn them on?
So like when you walk, like, I don't know, some guys are different. They have short walks. I have some pretty decent walks to a lot of these spots, like you're saying. So I'm carrying in my layers. So I'm not turning them on until I'm up in the stand. You know, usually it takes you a half hour, 40 minutes to cool down anyway. So I try to push it off and conserve the battery as much as possible.
Yeah.
And then when I start to feel that chill creep in, I'll turn them on low and go from there. But what I have found is, on a different note, those waist hand muffs, those are another, like, one of the things I would never go without again.
Yeah.
Because you can throw a couple of hot hands in there on the way in your truck and let them heat up. And by the time you get into the stand, they're nice and hot, and those things last all day.
See, and this is the thing that I struggle with, is like, I struggle like it's a huge life problem, but it's not. I always wear bigger gloves, but when I know I'm going to shoot, I take them off and stuff them in my pocket. And now I'm just bare hands. I don't like wearing big gloves to shoot in. It just doesn't feel comfortable for me. And so in the past, I'll run a lighter glove. So like a mechanics type glove. Yep. And then I'll have hand warmers in my pockets of my outer layer and just keep my hands in there. And then my right hand is my trigger hand. And so that one pretty much stays bare the whole time. Unless I can prepare to take it off before the shot. But I've had a muff before. But for me, I was like, dude, every time I climb up in a tree, it would get snagged on something and I'd be pissed because I had to like come back down to like undo it or whatever. But if I kept it in my backpack, it wouldn't be a big deal to, but yeah, those muffs, man, I've had a couple.
And I mean, it's a little bit more of a carrier too. So like the one I have, there's a zipper on top. So you keep like your grunt call, like, you know, your tags, maybe a knife, a couple small things right in the pouch, and it keeps from fumbling around your pack a lot, like your essentials right in the front, maybe a wind checker.
Gotcha. Yeah, I can see that. Talk to me about, is there any other differences in gear that you use when you're going and hunting different sized animals?
Basically keep my pack the same.
Yeah.
The only things I'll switch out is if, you know, when I'm going on these bigger trips with my dad, me and him go together. So I'll have a bunch of camera gear, batteries, stuff like that. Otherwise it's really the same setup. For home whitetails, you know, I try to do the self filming thing, but usually I just abandon it by the middle of the season and get back to the basics. But like for the bigger trips with my dad, that's kind of like the memory stuff for us. So I try to film as much of that stuff as I can.
Gotcha. All right. What kind of knife do you use?
My main skinning knife is a knife I got from Half Face Blades. Super nice knife, probably way too expensive, but, and then I'll keep Havilon with a bunch of replaceable blades in there as well.
Yeah. Yeah. So you have both. You have a fixed and then a replaceable.
Yep.
Gotcha. And do you use those for different things?
For skinning mostly, I'll use the fixed. It just feels nice, and it haven't, you know, going around bone and stuff. The little flimsy blades usually snap if I'm going too hard, or if, you know, it's a bigger animal. The hide might be tougher. But for the gutting, you pretty much just use the Havilon.
Okay. Are you the kind of guy who breaks the pelvis and cuts the pelvis bone?
Not normally.
Yeah.
If I'm home, I like now anymore, I don't even try to gut them in the field. I'll bring my deer right home and hang them up and then gut them right into a bucket. It's much easier. Than messing with it in the woods in the dark with a headlamp. So
you have a winch then or something in your house?
Yeah, one of those little Harbor Freight winches, garage.
Yeah. Yeah, I wish I had space in my garage. My garage right now is full of junk. Some people would probably kill me for saying this, but I have too much hunting equipment in my house. Too much. And so I'm going to have to sell some of it or get rid of it because it's not. There's stuff I'm like, oh, I might use this. And then it's been 10 years and I never, I'm a hoarder. Basically, I'm a hoarder.
Yep.
So,
I mean, it's not a bad problem to have.
Yeah, I guess. If it's hunting gear, pass it down. I do have a couple bows I'm keeping because I'm going to eventually pass them down to my boys or my kids when they're ready to shoot, shoot their first bows. So, any other hunting gear and equipment that has stood out for you over the course of the last couple years, of maybe like once you purchased it, you were like, dude, this is awesome.
Vortex binoculars.
Okay.
because I used to run like the Dick's Sporting Goods $50 Bushnells.
Yep.
I'm like, you can't see 30, 40 yards with those things. And, one side's always blurry no matter which way you turn it.
Yeah.
So once I actually invested in, and I mean, it's not, I think they're the Vortex Viper HDs. They're not like the best ones, but they're not the worst ones, kind of middle of the road. And what a friggin' difference.
Yeah, man.
And just to be able to see, you're hunting farmland and you see across the field, you could see what's going on around you. You don't have to wait till they come into 50 yards anymore.
Yeah, I can remember getting my first pair of Vortex back in the day before. There was two things. One, there were some times I never even used binoculars, so I couldn't even tell how big something was at 100 yards. And then I had also, my grandma gave me a pair of binoculars that she had two of that she used to watch birds at her bird feeder. And I'm guessing. Old school ones, like, dude, you know exactly what I'm talking about.
Oh yeah, they got like the hard case, buckskin, and they're big and the black, army surplus,
army surplus, huge. I'm like, I can't see shit out of these even at like 15 yards, right? You're trying to focus, and like, what am I looking at?
Yeah, and so I recently replaced my dad's set of those.
yeah, and so now picking up a brand like Vortex, you're just like, dude, it's awesome.
You're just
it was awesome. And then the fact, like, those companies like Vortex, a lot of optics companies, especially Vortex, have that VIP warranty, or like if it breaks or you break it, then you can send it back.
Yeah,
and then that's huge, dude. You're a lifelong customer at that point.
100%.
Yeah. So, well, cool, man. I appreciate you taking time out of your day to hop on and BS with me about hunting gear for a little bit. Thank you very much for your time, and good luck. I know how did you do this season?
I did pretty well. I shot that kudu in Africa, and then at home I shot a decent buck. He had a half rack on him, so from velvet he just had a big spike on one side and then a big 4-point side. So I ended up catching up with him late rifle, and then I shot 4 does, so it was a good season.
Meat in the freezer, my friend, right?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. All right. Well, congratulations on a good year. Thanks for your time, and good luck this upcoming season, man.
Yeah, you too, Dan. Appreciate it.
You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.
If you're a podcast host, listen up. This one's for you. My name is Allie Jackson. I'm the host of Finding Mr. Height, a dating and relationship podcast that I've been doing for 4 years now, sharing my positive and practical approach to dating that's built on my own life experience. And I wanted to share another experience that I've had, my secret behind monetizing my show. It's called Red Circle. And I was just telling my colleague about how much I love their platform. With Red Circle, not only am I getting a seamless hosting experience, but I also love the support I receive in ad sales. It's not just typical ad sales either. It's targeted opportunities based on my show and my life. And the platform is super simple. You just set your preferences and Red Circle matches you with sponsors that align with your show. You can vet every opportunity and their platform gives you great analytics. More recently too, my Red Circle team has brought me opportunities outside of my podcast on social media to really augment the podcast partnerships, bring them full circle. I just can't recommend them enough. If you want to give it a try, go to redcircle.com to get your free trial. That's redcircle.com for a free trial. If you're a podcast host, listen up. This one's for you. My name is Allie Jackson. I'm the host of Finding Mr. Height, a dating and relationship podcast that I've been doing for 4 years now, sharing my positive and practical approach to dating that's built on my own life experience. And I wanted to share another experience that I've had, my secret behind monetizing my show. It's called Red Circle. And I was just telling my colleague about how much I love their platform. With Red Circle, not only am I getting a seamless hosting experience, but I also love the support I receive in ad sales. It's not just typical ad sales either. It's targeted opportunities based on my show and my life. And the platform is super simple. You just set your preferences and Red Circle matches you with sponsors that align with your show. You can vet every opportunity and their platform gives you great analytics. More recently too, my Red Circle team has brought me opportunities outside of my podcast on social media to really augment the podcast partnerships, bring them full circle. I just can't recommend them enough. If you want to give it a try, go to redcircle.com to get your free trial. That's redcircle.com for a free trial.